At Cool Air Products, we developed AC Smart Seal Quick Shot with professionals in mind. It's the only product on the market that's 3-in-1, with sealant, lubricant, and UV dye all in a single application. It's non-toxic, non-flammable, 100% safe to the touch, eco-friendly, and compatible with all refrigerants. It's a safe solution option, backed by years of R&D, Intertech tested, and has sealed millions of leaks. AC Smart Seal, the professional's choice.
All right, guys, this is just my opinion, but I think when it comes to heat pumps, there's a lot of misinformation on how they work, where they can work, and how to install them from scratch, even in a retrofit application. Now, last year, in the spring of 2023, we had the first ever heat pump symposium in Toronto, Ontario. And listen, it was needed. There was a lot of good discussion going around at the symposium. And I learned from some people just having these discussions. There were vendors there, yes. And it brings the distributors and the techs and the business owners together. And everybody gets educated up on this subject. So this is part one of a three-part series, and we did these live at the Heat Pump Symposium, okay? So you hear some background noise and talking just like we're live on location. Now, with us on this podcast, we have Eric Rasmussen from Master. We have Paul Wilmus from Johnson Controls and Jim Bolger from Waterloo Energy Products. This conversation is around electrification, heat pumps, some misconceptions, some educational points. So it's a good listen, guys. This is part one of a three-part series. This is the HVAC Know-It-All Podcast. I'm your host, Gary McCready. This podcast is sponsored by Master, and just fitting to let you guys know that they carry their own brand of heat pump, central heat pump, and ductless, which is Mover, and they also carry the Fujitsu brand as well. So check them out at Master. Check out master.ca. This podcast is sponsored by Cintas, and what they do is provide uniform solutions across the board. If you're down south in the U.S., you might just need a hoodie or a long sleeve to get you through the day. But if you're up in Edmonton, hey, you're going to need a parka and maybe snow pants. Who knows what you're going to need? So Cintas is there to help with the blue-collar uniform needs. If you're interested, guys, check out cintas.com/HVAC know-it-all. For people listening to this podcast when it's published, can you explain electrification for us?
Well, I think it's a two-part thing. One is it's a mindset of changing your consumption of energy from maybe a carbon-based energy to an electrification, so that you're not at the point of use consuming carbon. You're consuming electricity, and I think what that does is it gives the focus back to the electrical generators to become more efficient.
Yep.
Obviously, as the electrification initiative grabs hold and becomes more predominant, I think we'll see more investment in the electrical grid and in generation. And I think the thought there is that it'll be from cleaner sources. It'll drive toward more efficiency. So I think the more immediate discussion might be, you know, the economics of the energy you're consuming.
Thank you.
And getting people to start thinking about electricity in a more economical way. So I think it's electrification is maybe synonymous with decarbonization. Same type of a conversation.
Okay, awesome. So I'm going to bring this to you, Jim. Why are heat pumps being pushed at this current time, in this current climate of this industry? Why is this sudden push of heat pumps being... It's trending upwards as we speak. So why do you think that is?
Well, I started doing heat pumps, primarily geothermal, in 2003. And I would say this is the most prevalent conversation I've ever heard around concerns around climate change mitigation, carbon reductions. And when the provinces like Ontario, Quebec, the Maritimes in many places, Manitoba and others that have a very significant supply of clean electricity, heat pumps become a huge tool in helping us meet our climate change goals. When we switch our heating and our domestic hot water needs to an electric-based heat pump, and because of the renewed efficiencies with some of this more modern equipment, we're able to maintain comfortable settings for people in their homes from a space heating perspective, and also look after their domestic hot water supplies, all in a carbon-free at-site kind of scenario. And if the provinces do their part in meeting the mandate and having a clean electricity supply, we actually can save at point of use anywhere from 4 to 8 tons of carbon out of a single residence, which is a powerful tool in terms of meeting our carbon reduction goals.
Yeah. So, Eric, we were just discussing inside the show there, and you were talking, because there's a lot of concerns about people not knowing how a heat pump works and if it's going to provide sufficient heat for a home, but you were talking about some of the supply air temps that we're getting off the Move Air. Do you want to just go over that quickly and compare it to a traditional Air Force furnace, for example?
Your traditional natural gas furnace, I mean, it's going to give you, you know, typically it's 65, 70 degree supply air outlet temperature. You get a 70 degree delta T across that. With a Move Air system, now we're seeing temperatures of 41 to, you know, 53, you know, on the outside edge, right?
So you're talking C.
Degrees Celsius, yeah. So what we're getting here, you know, with coil temperature targets, inverter-driven compressors, you know, we're really starting to see some high outlet temperatures, which are comparable, you know. A little bit cooler still, right? But again, comparable, and I mean, and then we look at the production cost for that temperature. I mean, what it's costing us per BTU, right? What's it cost to heat your home? So at the end of the day, I mean, Paul mentioned, you know, with the discussion around decarbonization and electrification and the emissions Jim mentioned, right? So we look at a source, you know, the production, the generation facilities where they can control the emissions much more stringently than we do on a residential application with, say, a gas furnace or an oil furnace, propane furnace. They're continuously monitoring the emissions and controlling them and producing the least amount of emission for per kilowatt of energy that they're putting out. We're taking that now with a heat pump and using that clean, you know, the as cleanly produced electricity as we can have, yeah, and transmitting that into heating our homes, right? So
now, what are you hearing from the end user or through your distributor base, like your or the dealer base, I should say? What are you the feedback you're getting from the end user on the performance of the heat pumps?
Well, from the what we're seeing now largely is that most systems, centrally ducted heat pump systems, are getting installed with a backup, whether that's an electric resistance coil,
yeah.
I mean, a backup heater, just in case that the heat pump itself doesn't keep up at low temperatures. But what we're finding out is a lot of the, in most cases, the electric backup never runs. They're completely supplying their heat demand with the heat pump. And, you know, so now we're, you know, we're really entering an age where heat pumps are, the efficacy of them in the Canadian market is there.
Right. I think mm-hmm. that's a significant point that he makes on the equipment. You know, as a manufacturer, we have a target to rate the equipment at a certain performance, right?
Yeah.
What is maybe misunderstood is that the performance of the heat pump may actually go well beyond that. So what I found personally with some of the field trial work we did with one of our recent launches, it's a high SEER inverter unit.
Yep.
We had people put these in throughout the United States in a variety of climates, including throughout Montana,
okay,
where the unit, even though it was rated at 5 below, the unit is performing with incredible results at less than 15 and 20 below.
Yeah.
So there's, you know, the data, the spec sheet on the piece of equipment is based on what it was targeted to be rated at. That doesn't necessarily mean that's where the performance stops.
And a lot of times they're understated.
Right. That's correct.
Better to under-promise and over-deliver than vice versa.
Right.
I've been hearing this too, that some heat pumps are outperforming what they were told they were would perform at. And like you were saying, the backup electric heat strips aren't even coming on unless it's severely cold outside. Like we have these cold rushes coming down from the Arctic and whatnot. But besides that, through the winter, they're staying steady heat pump without using the backup whatsoever.
Yeah, and again, it comes down to under promise and over deliver is a good way to point it. You know, we've got ranging capacities anywhere from 18,000 BTUs to 60,000 BTUs. But when you look at the rating, the standard rating temperatures that have been used around the industry of 17 degrees Fahrenheit, which is negative 8.3 Celsius, and 47 degrees, which is positive 8.3 degrees Celsius, a 3-ton unit, so 36,000 rated BTU unit, at 47 degrees is putting out, you know, upwards to 50,000 BTUs.
Yeah.
So, and maintaining 38,000 down to minus 15 degrees Celsius. Mm-hmm. So, or 5 degrees Fahrenheit. So, I mean, the performance is there, capacities, you know, proper sizing, better insulation, the new construction, right? That can be where, rigid insulation. I mean, homes that have been, you know, re-insulated or spray foamed, things like that, their actual loads have gone down. And then there is the other side of that where, you know, your traditional fossil fuel systems, you know, have traditionally been oversized for the longest time. So your home didn't ever really need 120,000 BTUs. It probably only needed 70, you know, or 60.
That's a major problem, too, is the oversize. I've gone into many homes to do heat pump jobs where we've decided to do the load calc, and it's amazing how much oversized equipment you see, right? I think the last one we did was it was an 80,000 BTU furnace existing, and after the load calc, it only needed 45,000 to 50,000 BTUs
right.
So
that's
heat.
That's the flip side of the conversation, you know, on a gas furnace that is rated at a fixed BTU output. If it's oversized in the home, you know, the steady state burn on that furnace really isn't achieved until it's been running for 10 minutes.
Which it never does.
Right. So you might have a 96% efficient furnace, but if it only runs for 6 minutes, you're probably not even, you know, getting 91 or 92% out of it.
I describe that scenario quite often to customers. It's especially prevalent in a two-story home.
Rapid locking system, guys. It is a press system for refrigeration pipe and air conditioning pipe. And my man, Paul Schubert, who is the president of that company, is such a down-to-earth pro contractor dude, and that's why they have gained such a cult following, not just because they're pro contractor, but because their system actually works when you do it properly. But you pair in the fact that they are pro contractor and want to get involved with the contractors at their level, makes the company even more attractive to look at. So check out Rapid Locking System, guys.
So you describe a scenario where, you know, our industry as a whole has had this philosophy that bigger is better, both with heating and air conditioning. So I describe a scenario where your thermostat calls for heat, the furnace comes on in the only state it can, which is 100% capacity in a single stage furnace. It heats up at the thermostat location inside 5-10 minutes and doesn't run long enough to heat up the ductwork running to the extremities of your house, which are typically bedrooms. So you're never as warm in the winter, and the same problem exists in cooling because you have a single stage unit that's quite often oversized. It cools the place down in 5 minutes but doesn't run long enough to cool the ductwork going to the extremities or to properly dehumidify. That's where this heat pump equipment, most of which is inverter style compressor or VRF, really can be a big part of the solution in terms of creature comfort inside a home.
Yeah, for
and
sure.
I think that's a big benefit.
For sure. So let me just, were you going to add something there?
No, that's right. Okay. I wanted to add something to that is that versus the on-off scenario of your traditional heating system with the inverter drives, the goal of the inverter-driven system, and especially in a centrally ducted system, is for the heat pump to run continuously, right? So they would to try to maintain a steady, comfortable temperature without having fluctuations throughout the structure, right? Yeah. So, I mean, instead of it being an on-off system, now it's an on system where it's just varying the output, the capacity of the unit, how much heat it's putting into the space to just maintain your temperature. It's trying to run at its steady state efficiency the entire time without shutting off and just you know, at some point in time, Rick, the compressor may be at its lowest frequency, just idling along, drawing very, very little, minimal amounts of power, so much so that, you know, it's barely perceptible, you know, your audible sound, your noise coming from the system, but your temperature of the house never fluctuates, just maintains a nice, steady, constant, you know, 20 degrees Celsius or 21 or 22, whatever you want.
Yeah, and that's great for your on-offs, your short cycling, and then even if the unit is sized correctly and it's an on-off style unit, when you shut it off and then you have these delays in your thermostats, maybe delays in the equipment, your humidity, like in the summer, for example, your humidity and temperature in the home is rising up. And then we have to turn the equipment on and get rid of it again, where we're in modulating inverter systems is just maintaining that the whole time. So, good point. I want to change this up a little bit, and I want to get... Jim, we talked about this briefly before the conversation, then we'll go to yourself about the education to the customers or the contractors, but the pushback, you're not seeing any pushback from customers whatsoever because you're targeting that market. They know you're in that market, but I'm kind of all over the place as a contractor. I'll do AC furnace. I will do a heat pump. And when somebody contacts me about a furnace, for example, and an AC, I will mention the word heat pump. And they've never heard of it. They don't understand it. They want to stay away from it.
Yeah.
What do you think about that?
Well, I will clarify a little bit. I have some people start the conversation by saying, I'd like to get a furnace with a heat pump.
Okay.
So a hybrid system.
Yeah.
And I ask them in the conversation, I always start a conversation, anybody who broaches the subject of wanting a heat pump, the next question out of my mouth is, I go, how important is it to you to deal with climate change mitigation and carbon reductions in your home? And quite often the answer for me is it's 90 to 95% of my decision-making process. If that's their answer, then I broach the next question, have you ever thought about looking after your entire heating needs with a heat pump? With an electric auxiliary to augment temperature or as a backup. And they go, well, the other three guys that were here told me I couldn't do that and it was a dumb idea. So I take them through that journey about what would be involved, how it can look after their load. And in today's numbers, our levels of carbon tax are at $65 a ton. If we continue on our current trajectory, we'll be at $170 a ton by 2030. Right now, as it stands with today's gas prices and today's electricity prices in many parts of our province and across the country, it's actually cheaper to heat with an all-electric heat pump system than it is with natural gas. So why compromise on your goals to reduce carbon when you can do it with a heat pump? Some of the restrictions that come up with people and concerns, the same way it does with electric vehicles with range anxiety, there's some people who only have 100 amp services in their homes.
Yes, yeah.
Okay, that's a something I think that should be financially supported by the Greener Homes or Enercan.
I agree.
Because I think to allow people to transition fully to a carbon-free at-site solution is very beneficial to their goals of that program and the goals across this country in terms of carbon emissions reductions. That's something that should be supported. And by the time I have that conversation with many consumers, and I talk to them about, are you considering to get an electric vehicle down the road? And they go, yes, absolutely. Well, I said, then investing in your home and getting a 200 amp service is a very wise investment because it adds to your ability to meet your carbon reductions goals and it adds to the value of your home, even in a resale scenario. So. Sorry, long-winded, but you get the point.
So, Paul, we were talking about the dealer or the contractor being educated enough to educate their customers. Now, I think that is more important than a customer-based education. The dealers, the contractors, the technicians, the company owners, they have to be educated first and properly so they can then convey that information properly to their customers. So where do we start with that? How do we get the technicians and company owners and contractors educated fully on these systems so they can go out and educate their customers properly, sell them properly, install them properly, service them properly?
Right. Well, I think I think you summed that up pretty well. We're humans. We're creatures of habit, and we like to stay in our comfort zones, right? So we're used to the the fossil fuel furnace and the air conditioner and the traditional methods. But I think it's so important for the contractor to educate themselves as to new product, new technology. Make sure they completely understand that and they train on it and they become well-rounded and comfortable with it. Because only at that point are they really going to be able to go out and engage with a homeowner and have that confidence to talk about that, right? I think that's the challenge right now. The dealer, the me as a manufacturer and Master Group and you as our distributors, right? The boots on the ground, if you will, that supports the contractors. If we're not doing our job and engaging the contractor and educating, providing content and providing opportunities to come to trainings in events like this, really, to learn about new equipment, new technology, we're just not going to be successful in engaging the homeowner who has questions. Maybe they've heard about it, but they're really comfortable with doing what, replacing the same system they had, furnace and air conditioner. Well, I think we're at that point now where we really, as an industry, we really have an obligation to sit down with them and explain what we've learned, what's possible, what that looks like for them in their home, okay? And maybe even help them with resources so they can start to do some of their own learning, right? We need the consumer to be comfortable and be on board and understand the difference of lifestyle, the way the equipment's going to operate, the expectations of the equipment, because it's all different. It doesn't mean it's bad. It really is good, but it's going to be different. We have to be able to explain that so they're prepared and accepting of that.
I just used it again, Viper coil cleaner in the can to clean an old, dirty condenser that has been neglected through time. I use the Coil X brush from Supco to brush it down, vacuum it off, and then I use the Viper coil cleaner to degrease it and pull the rest of the dirt out, and now it's spotless. So if you guys are looking to clean these small reach-in coils or even like larger coils and you want to get some good teeth into that coil to pull out the dirt, the Coil X brush works, and then that foaming Viper coil cleaner in a can pulls the rest of it out and degreases as well. So check them out.
So there's a couple of points there. We talk about the expectation of the equipment, what the consumer is going to expect, and then we also talk about, some of the trigger points for consumers, right? When anybody hears about heating with electricity, they think about the cost, and if you go purely by the numbers, without taking into account how efficient a heat pump is. Then you can be, you could be swayed to the natural gas side of things. But when you look at the facts and the way, you have a heat pump that's running a 3-to-1 coefficient of performance, a COP, at 3-to-1, even though your standard electrical cost is 12 cents a kilowatt versus natural gas at, 5 cents a kilowatt, you throw in a 3-to-1 COP, now you're at 4. You're at 4 cents for that kilowatt of heat. And so it really starts, and then when you consider that in Ontario with a three-tier electrical rate, your lowest rate at 7 cents a kilowatt, now you start dividing that by three, it's cheaper than natural gas. So it's the efficiency of the heat pumps has improved to the point where it is now cheaper. And if I can show that it's cheaper than natural gas, that's 4 to 5 cents a kilowatt. When you're looking at propane or fuel oil that are running 22, 23 cents a kilowatt, it's a lot cheaper. It's a great opportunity especially for anybody on propane, the rural communities, things like that, to transition to a cleaner fuel that's going to cost them less money at the end of the day. It's about saving money and reducing emissions.
Yeah,
and we can do that.
Yeah. No, it's this whole heat pump trend is very it's very amusing to me, and I love watching it kind of take off from its beginning stages. And that kind of takes us to the end of this, and I'm going to ask each one of you your opinion on this. Is this trend here to stay, or is it here for a little while, and then we're on to something else? Because in my opinion, I think this trend is here for a very long time, because if you think about it, all the ACs, all the furnaces that are in people's homes, over the next little while, they're going to be switching them out. And when they switch them out, if they get up to speed, if the contractors get up to speed on the whole heat pump scenario and how they work, how they can be beneficial, all the things we've talked about, I think this trend is here to stay for a very long time. So, Jim, I'll start with you on that. How long is this trend here to stay?
That's a loaded question for me. I've been doing heat pumps since 2003. Started off just doing geothermal.
So the whole electrification thing and just kind of the what we're in now, the heat pump symposium is the first of its kind, the first annual heat pump symposium. So if you take it from recent events going forward,
building up context there. So this is the most prevalent conversation I've ever heard from consumers on trying to deal at their own level, micro level, with climate change mitigation and carbon reductions. But let's not mince words. Much of what has happened here is because of policy direction and incentives. Okay, and in my humble opinion, and I've been involved at the local level, municipal politics, and I've been heavily entrenched with politics at all levels in terms of, you know, assessing policy and how it works. And there's two things that drive change. It's either a carrot or a stick. And right now we have the stick in terms of carbon tax, and we have the carrot in terms of the incentives that they're providing under the Greener Homes Enbridge program. Unfortunately, I've seen the ebbs and flows of historic situations where, you know, governments change and policy change. The current direction of the Conservatives under Pierre Poilievre is to completely eliminate carbon tax. So that eliminates the stick in terms of this direction happening.
Yeah, good point.
And then if consequently the money that's funding Greener Homes in Enbridge is being raised out of carbon tax revenue, if that program stops, I'm saying I think there's enough interest in climate change mitigation and carbon reductions that this momentum will continue, but I will not mince words that change in government and policy direction and climate change denial could play a prevalent role in this being a sustainable and long-term fix. I personally, I've invested 2 decades in this industry to try and promote, you know, carbon reductions and energy efficiency. It would be a shame to see this momentum get quelled because of lack of political will.
Eric, how do you feel?
I think the program's going to be around for a long time.
Yeah.
I'll avoid the political side of things. Just
why?
It's I'll just avoid that side of the discussion. So, but do I think it's going to stick around? I think it's going to stick around. I mean, it's I think for the population, I think it's a good transition, right? Like, I mean, if we're producing the power, generating the power, controlling the power cleanly, and doing it smartly. You know what? I mean, if you really want to make a change, find a way to reduce the cost of electricity, right? So bring it down closer to the. In which case, that there's your additional carrot, and taking the stick out of the equation, right? Making it more affordable. Like, I mean, we can do that with a heat pump. Reduce your energy cost overall. I think it's going to stick around.
Yeah.
On that note, just to add, like, the government of Ontario, by accident, to help the EVs charging, is introducing an ultra-low nighttime hydro rate starting in May, and it'll be under 3 cents a kilowatt hour. They haven't decided, I don't think, 100% whether it's going to be from 7 p.m. till 7 a.m. or 11 p.m. till 7 a.m., but that'll help astronomically. The biggest load of a heat pump of any kind comes at night in the winter. And if we have a rate that's 2.5 cents per kilowatt hour, that goes a long ways towards even improving the business case for heat pumps.
That's a very interesting point. I'm glad you brought that up. So we'll end this off. So Paul, your thoughts on trends. Are we here to stay in this trend? I mean, politics aside, even if we do change up policy, I mean, we put these things in people's homes, your friends come over and go, this is how I'm heating my home, and they think it's, I mean, policy change aside, we could still trend up even if the policies change. It's just something that, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think if you look at the technology, York International back in the 70s really is the manufacturer that drove and pioneered the heat pump technology, primarily in the Northeast U.S.
Yeah.
And so we, on the panel here, we've been around long enough that we remember 25 cent a gallon gas. You know, I saw here today price per liter in Canada is going to $1.55 a liter. So that puts you at 570 something a gallon, right? So back in the 70s, York International, this was before Johnson Controls invested in us. And so the technology, the heat pump initiative, the interest in consumers to save energy started back then, and it really has not stopped. It's grown consistently and persistently since. And here we find ourselves today at this awesome event, really. Look at all of the manufacturers of heat pumps that are here and the tremendous investment by all of these really wonderful manufacturers toward this technology. So there's nothing but good that will come from this. There'll be a spirit of competition. There'll be innovation. There'll be new communications to consumers. Coming from, really driven from all of these manufacturers and distributors that are here. And I think nothing but good will come from all of this effort. So I don't think that the technology will never go away. It'll just get improved upon, right? And then we'll find new ways to deploy that. But I think with this amount of interest, I mean, I've never seen anything like this. This is a dedicated heat pump symposium. Okay. I've never been to something like this in the States, right? So this, maybe it's Canada that's really driving this, it'll probably push back down through the United States. So
it's exciting times.
It's nice to see this kind of interest, and I don't think it's going to let up. I think this is going to move forward. I think we'll probably have a lot better electrical grid because of the demand that'll be placed on it, and they'll be forced to really invest in that. And I think that's what will sustain this.
Hope you enjoyed the show. Follow HVAC Know-It-All on Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, TikTok, Twitter, LinkedIn, and anywhere else Gary feels like popping up. This has been a Two Smokes and a Coffee production.